The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
and your drink is JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
What up, Footy Primers? Hope everybody is recovering from a wonderful New Year's Eve. Hey, we thought we'd put a best of the best up, and why not put one of the best of the best, Emmanuel Petit, live from SiriusXM this past summer. Enjoy!
All right, welcome to Toronto, mate.
Thank you.
Yeah, how are you enjoying it?
So far, so good. It's the first time for me in Toronto.
Oh, yeah?
I've been a couple of times in Montreal.
Yeah.
But first time for me here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you watched any football in Canada?
Yeah, 2 days ago. I think, that was 2 days ago. We were been invited to the Montreal game against Chicago when they lost 2-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I spoke with the chairman. I spoke with different people over there, and I watched the game. So
it's been a tough season for Montreal. They're losing a lot right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Still, what, 30 games to go? So
yeah.
They need points.
There's a lot of losing in Canada right now. Toronto as well. It's been a bit of a mess, actually.
I hope so. They're going to change something, but it's going to be very difficult, I think.
Did you ever consider, I mean, I know MLS was so new when you were playing, right?
Yeah.
But did you ever consider coming over here and playing?
Not really.
No?
Not really. And Qatar as well, we're starting you to develop football more than 20 years ago. But no, I had no chance to keep on playing because of my knee. They cut my leg in two parts. And to be honest with you, I feel pain every single second, so I may have to get an operation and change my knee to a titanium knee.
Now?
Yeah. I receive a mail from my daughter, and they told me that you should make an X-ray ready or high RAM to see if you need to change your knee.
So what's it like now? So with a knee, is it like a car dealership? Do you get to go in there and pick the knee that you want?
Titanium, please.
I spoke with some former players. They did it on both knees.
Yeah.
And they said to me that it changed their lives. And it becomes normal now every day, not to do sports.
Yeah.
I love to do sports, but unfortunately, I cannot play anymore. I did it a month ago. I played 50 minutes. And my knee, my legs was swollen for at least a week.
Yeah.
That's tough, right? Jimmy played in England for many, many years too. Didn't do your knee, but back and ankle injuries,
a lot of
right?
Injuries, yeah.
How, I mean, when you realize as an athlete, when you realize you just can't play anymore, how difficult is that?
It's very difficult. You're not prepared for that. You know that sooner or later you have to retire, but you try to push all the time, you know, the date and the limit of it. But when you have a big injury like this, for me, the most difficult thing to handle is I didn't decide to stop. My body tells me, you have to stop. Because my heart, my muscles, my ligaments, everything is okay. But
Was it at Barcelona when you first began having the knee issues, or was that in Chelsea?
No, that was where I was with Chelsea.
Chelsea.
Because since Abramovich took over the club, you know, it changed everything, the facilities, the training camp. It was beautiful, modern, you know. But back in days with Ken Bates, our president, we had to train every single day to a school facilities near Heathrow.
School.
Airport. Yeah. And it was, honestly, it was shit. The pitch, they were hard like this, summer, winter, and many players get bad injuries. What was the name of the Italian guy, the midfield player?
Di Canio?
Yeah, he won the Champions League with Chelsea. He became a manager straight
after.
Di Matteo. And Marcel Desailly, they had to stop their career after that because of the Achilles, you know. And because of the state of the pitch, it was unbelievable, you know, for a club like Chelsea.
Do you know when you retire, and a lot of players, they tend to get involved in the game, get into coaching some aspect of it. When you retired, like, what was it like? Like, mentally, did you just walk away from the game completely?
No,
did you get involved with clubs? Or
I always prepare my life after football. What, 10 years? Yeah, since I started when I was 17 years old. And I started to think about what I should do after my career. And this is something I think players should prepare, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the players, you know, because they think that they have the money, they can have the time, the luxury, you know, to think about it.
Yeah.
But life, you know, can change very easily. Especially, I noticed that most of the players, they get divorced 2 years after they finish their career.
Is that right, Jimmy?
Yeah, that's true.
We're laughing, but it's...
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think... I'm working a big project like this, you know, because I want to offer athletes to prepare their after career while they are still playing.
Yeah, it's a great initiative.
Yeah.
Because you're right. You know, a lot of guys do retire. They get depressed because they don't know what's next. Mm. And I think if they had something in place that they could... you know, foresee what they wanted to do and, you know, certain hobbies. And I think it's important.
Especially in sport now, because when I retired, it was in 2003, so more than 20 years ago. The only option we had, you know, back in days was become a manager, work on as a TV pundit, or sport director, things like this, you know. But now you have so many... different things you can do, you know, different options, you know, for players, marketing, sponsoring, management. We have so many things, you know, and I want to develop that, you know, for players.
Yeah.
But when you find a cause that's important to you, in your case, it's brain health with BrainEye.
Yeah.
Obviously, you experienced tragedy some years ago now with your brother.
Yeah.
It seemed to be a natural fit for you. Did they come to you? How did this brain?
Well, they contacted me, BrainEye, more than a year ago, and I was very happy straight away to join them because of I like the idea to save people's lives, especially in nowadays in our world. I think that's very important, you know, to be helpful, to do something for human being, human care, and. Yes, as you mentioned, I had a terrible issue when I started my professional career because my older brother died on the pitch after receiving a strong ball in his head. He died because of an aneurysm. But I spoke with a lot of athletes. Some of them are still playing, not only in football. It could be in rugby as well. And... but a lot of former players, you know, I spoke with, some of them, they have already issues, you know, with their brain. Mm-hmm. So when BrainEye called me and contacted me and explained to me the app, the way they've been working on it for the last 10 years with the neuroscientist, I thought to myself, this is a great, great things, you know, and we should do that. I know there is a big taboo, especially in... up, you know, in professional, because the show must go on, whatever happens. I know that I spoke with so many rugby players, and they said to me, Manu, we have big issues with concussions, but what can we do? We're under so much pressure to play. If we don't play, somebody will take our place, you know, and we'll be off, and we'll receive so much pressure from the families as well, from agent. So it's hidden injuries and concussion for me are very important. Why? Because this is something you don't see straight away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can bring something important that can help, you know, the medical staff, but as well the players for their health. We're not talking about sport, we're talking about health. And this is why my BrainEye called me and contacted me. I said yes straight away.
So BrainEye is an app.
Yes.
And it helps diagnose potential problems.
Yes.
I've got the app on my phone. I will be signing up for it. it terrifies me a little bit. We all play sport.
I check myself once per month.
Yeah.
Because I realized that I'm 55 now. And for the last 5 years, maybe because I get older, but maybe because of what I've done when I was playing. But since I'm a child, I play football since I am 6 years old. So I can't remember how many times, you know, headers or shoulders or my nose has been broken 6 times. So I have no idea how many times this has been broken, and my head as well. But my biggest concussion was during a game in Champions League between Barcelona and AC Milan. And I remember waking up, you know, at the hospital 2 days later. I couldn't remember anything about the game. But for me, this is something, a big concern for me, because I know former players, they start to develop Alzheimer, Parkinson, dementia, early stage, around 55, 60 years old. And for me, it's a big issue because, as I said, the show must go on. And we are under so much pressure. Those guys who are controlling the game, they don't want the players to have the opportunity to stop playing. I can understand that. But we must understand that health is more important than money. And I think we're not here, you know, just to press the players just like lemon, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even now in this day and age, you watch football matches, rugby matches, you see clearly players with concussions going off for a few minutes, getting back on the pitch. They're not being pulled off. I know there's concussion spotters out there. Ooh. It's improving, but it's too slow, it seems. Add that to the number of games footballers are playing nowadays. Mm. I mean, at what point will players no longer be seen as just commodities and actually as human beings with a life after their career?
Yeah, as I said, you can receive a big shock in your head, and after 2 minutes, it's okay. You can keep on playing, but it doesn't mean that the following day you won't fall down for any reasons. And can you imagine if you give the opportunity to a coach, a manager, you know, from the grassroots for the kids? I think this is important for the kids because we're not dealing with money and fame. But can you imagine that if a kid receives a kick in his head and then in 45 seconds you have the opportunity to know if he's got brain troubles, you know, straight away. So
and that's with the app.
Yeah, that's like, the app.
Actually, on the pitch, you
yes,
can use the app.
It's very easy to use. It's accurate. And it will screen your eyes, which is linked with brain. And that will give you an accurate result, you know, on your brain health. And for me, this is very easy to use. It's not expensive at all, as well. So it's like a tool, you know, a very important tool that can help doctors, but as well parents.
Yeah. Like, would you do you think the, you know, Major League Soccer or the Premier League and other leagues around the world will start using this? Because it sounds fantastic to me.
That's a good question. I've been dealing with FIFA and UEFA, you know, the European body government, and as well the world FIFA now ruling the world, you know, and in football. And it's quite difficult to open these doors because, as I said, maybe they see us as enemy, an opportunity for the player to stop playing, but this is not the case. We just want to help the players, to help those organizations to protect the players. And it's quite difficult sometimes to open professional doors for those reasons.
What about players' unions?
That's why we're thinking, you know, the players' unions, especially in France. I've been talking to the rugby union, which is Proval, and because it's a big concern for them as well. And I know many players that are struggling every single day because of that. Some of them have stopped their career It's amazing, their stories. Honestly, it's frightening. Yeah. And I give you one example, you know. Some players came to me saying that, listen, Manu, it's very simple. I walk up the stairs home, and when I get up, I don't know why I'm here. I completely forgot in space of 10 seconds what I was doing upstairs. So this is the kind of situation they are dealing, you know, they have to handle every single day. So it's a big, big matter, but because it's kind of taboo, you know, in a big, big sports, that's why because of the fame and money and the pressure, some players, they feel guilty, you know, to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's very personal, you know. They don't share it to anyone because they're scared of losing their position, their contract, things like this.
And the issue is that, you know, the tragedy is often you don't see the effects for many years. It's very rare that you see it actually happen to someone on the pitch. Mm. It's rare. It does happen.
Yeah.
We know that. Sadly, you might need to see that from a big player for the authorities to take it seriously.
Yeah, but, well, top players in football, you know, they've been complaining about the schedule of games, more and more games every single season. Look, we just finished, they just finished the World Cup club. Top players for the last 2-3 seasons have been complaining about that, but they don't represent the vast majority of players. Mm-hmm. 80% of the players, they don't live in the same world, and their hope is to live what they're living. So when they talk in the press, fans, people in general, they don't understand what they are saying because of the money they receive and the fame they receive. They said, yeah, you should be happy for that, so shut up. No, yeah, honestly, so this is the way it is. Yeah. And I can understand that. But we're not talking about money and fame. We're talking about else, which is for me more important than anything. And there is no, I mean, all the players are not reunited in the same way. But if one day it's the case, that could be something powerful, you know, that could change something. At the moment, Brunei can be a game changer, you know, because of what it represents. But we need the help of those who are in charge of the game. But our target, okay, if we can open the doors up, we would be more than happy. But our target is really human beings and kids.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, football has changed. When you first came to England from Monaco, Arsene Wenger brings you over.
Yeah.
Were you surprised about the football culture back in those days? I'm assuming from your reaction that you were.
I remember a game we played away with Arsenal, and that was against Southampton. Matt Le Tissier was playing up front, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Legend.
Yeah, legend. And I remember I was very disappointed by the way we were playing on the pitch. You know, the ball was always in the air, and I used to be raised with the ball on the grass, you know, all the time with technical skills, you know, quick passes, quick movements. And I was quite tired, you know. It was very physical, you know, always a battle, a fierce battle on the pitch. And I was quite disappointing at the halftime. And I remember Arsene Wenger, he came to me after the game and he said, Manu, I have full confidence on you. You are all the quality, you know, to adapt yourself to the English football. So keep on going. It would change. Sooner or later, it would change. And he was right. And all of a sudden, in space of a few weeks, everything changed. And I enjoyed the way we played, you know, with Arsenal. It was the back four, typical English, you know, we could travel everywhere, you know, they were warriors. They were warriors. They were the soul of the team, those guys. And in midfield and up front, we were a mix of European players, you know. And we used to play very, you know, the ball on the grass, quick movement, quick passing with Dennis Bergkamp, for example. Yeah. It was the pit.
You had a phenomenal
strawberry
team
on the cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Thierry Henry came, Nicolas Anelka, those guys, so amazing
you had
players.
You had Vieira
besides yes,
you
and Patrick,
well.
Yeah. Patrick, yeah.
Not a bad team.
Oh, they were unbelievable.
We won the double.
Yeah. First year, right?
Well, no, that was, you know, when I was a kid, I used to read cartoons about English footballs, and I loved it. Back in days, I had the opportunity to watch football only once per week, you know, on TVs. Otherwise, you have to wait, you know, a special show, you know, on Sunday afternoon in France to see what's happening or what happened, you know, in England or Germany or Italy, things like this. Now, you know, you have football every single day, but I was dreaming to come to England for the football, but for the passion as well, the link between the players and the fans. I loved it. Honestly, I loved it.
Who would you say was the toughest opponent that you played against in the Premier League?
There is a few in midfield players. As a midfield players, I would say Roy Keane, definitely. Yeah, because it was kind of... I'm not sure if I can say that, you know.
You can.
You can say whatever you want.
You can say whatever you want.
He was kind of... I can't say that.
A fucking dick?
He was always trying to intimidate you, try to put you under pressure, always bad words on the pitch, before the pitch, before entering the pitch, on the pitch as well. Had as well issues with the skipper, you know, the skipper of Chelsea back in days, the English guys, I can't remember his name.
Oh, Dennis Wise?
Dennis Wise.
Yeah.
This guy used to get a baseball bat in his car all the time. So with Vinnie Jones as well.
Vinnie Jones,
really, really bad guys, you know. And and it's completely changed now with nowadays with football. Because of probably the VAR, you know. They cannot do exactly what we used to do back in days. But the fight, I think 20 years ago on the pitch, was sometimes a street battle.
Yeah.
And the English fans loves it. Referees, you know, they loves it as well because most of the time they let the game play.
Yeah.
But it's quite confused for European players when you first come to England because of that, because you think this is a foul, ref. You need to stop the game. No, keep on going. Okay, right. Okay.
Yeah. But you had, I mean, listen, that Arsenal team had Tony Adams. Martin Keown.
Martin Keown, Steve Bould.
Yes. Ray Parlour, right?
Nigel Winterburn, Lee Dixon.
So what's the relationship between those English players and the new foreign players? Was it you tight? Were you friends?
Arsene, you know, Arsene Wenger, he said to the French community, because we were probably 6 or 7 players, we used to speak in French all the time, and he get pissed about that. And he told us that we are the foreign players. We are not in France anymore. So we need to adapt ourselves to the English culture, which means you have to speak English. I'm sorry, but my English sometimes is not good enough. But this is why we started, even when we were only together, to speak in English. I know it's easier, you know, to speak with your natural language, but if you want to adapt yourself, I mean, this is why I don't understand sometimes when you're foreigners, when you go abroad, it's not your country. This is your responsibility to adapt yourself. This is not the country. The country will open their arms, you know, to welcome you. But then you have to do every effort, you know, to get inside the community, which means you have to learn the language, you have to learn the traditions, the mentality, things like this. I think that's very important. So the mix of the players we had when we won the double, when Arsene was our manager, was amazing because he understood everything. And because those guys, you know, the back four, you know, typical English with Pat Rice, the assistant of Arsene Wenger, typical English as well. And those guys, they were intelligent enough, you know, to let us the time, you know, to adapt ourselves on the pitch, but as well off the pitch. And because we wanted to do the best we can all together, we reached the right mentality and a soul, you know, came from the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually read Paul Mercer's book, and it was something else. I mean, before Wenger got just the culture at Arsenal, and then Wenger came in and he changed it around completely.
You have no idea.
What was that like?
Well, typical English breakfast when you play, for example, at 1 o'clock, sausage. I mean, can you believe that? This is now, this is kind of tradition that Arsene has to fight against.
Yeah.
And chocolate bars as well in the bus before you arrive at the stadium. I remember, you know, I have a few examples, you know, how bad he was, you know, seeing some players eating English breakfast or eating chocolate bars before a game. He was, I can't remember, I remember everything, but he had to fight against that. And the English guys, they understood completely what he was doing. He came with a European vision, you know, in terms of food, rest, sleeping, diets, you know, drink a lot, things like this, you know. Yeah. He always told us that you are professional, you've been paid for that. So you have something to deliver on the pitch for the fans and for the club. This is your responsibility. So yeah, you have to prepare yourself as professional. So you have to shut down so many things, you know, in the English culture around the game. And it was quite difficult at the beginning, but it worked.
I think part of it too was back in those days, most English people began realizing that we're being left behind here. Mm. You know, European football is moving in that direction, and we're still stuck here playing these old moribund tactics with these poor work ethics, diets. Mm-hmm. So they were almost welcoming Arsene Wenger. So Alex Ferguson was there, of course, old school, but understood that as well.
Yeah.
I think in many ways. But I think looking back, the 98 France team, the World Cup winners, which you were part of, that did a lot for the foreign invasion in England, because English fans watched that team and thought, shit, we want a piece of that.
Yeah,
we want
that. Think before us, I think two players opened the door for us in England. It was Eric Cantona.
Yeah, right.
Eric was still the king at Manchester United.
Yeah.
And I think he made such a big impact in England for French players. And then you had we had David Ginola.
Ginola, yeah.
The magnificent David Ginola.
What a player.
What a player too. So back in days at this time, we were brand French players, beautiful players, but losers. Those guys started to change our mentality in England. And then Arsene came and he won the double. And then more French players came and they won. And then we won something with the national team. And then we repeated two years after that with the European Championship in 2000. So we were not losers anymore. We were winners, and which is very important. And every single sport in France started to change as well. We were not the first sport, you know, to change the mentality in France. The first one was handball players, you know.
Yeah.
They were world champion before us. Right. And they started to change that, you know, a collective sport.
Yeah.
But individual as well has changed. And then that's why now you can see in France a lot of world champions, European champions in different disciplines.
Did you come through Clairefontaine?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Is that after or before?
I was raised at Monaco Academy.
Yeah, Monaco, yeah. But the national program, though, wasn't that in Clairefontaine?
Yeah, Clairefontaine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Produced such great talent.
Yes.
Over and over again. But, I mean, that 98 team is probably the best outside maybe the Spain teams of 2010-11. Mm-hmm. Maybe the best international team I think I've ever seen. What was it about that team?
I think we had great teams, you know, in France. I remember, you know, the square in midfield with Platini, Tigana, Gires, Fernandez. They should have won the World Cup before us. And I keep on thinking about the semi-final we lost against Germany with a weird referee. It's very bad things happened on the pitch, but they should have won the World Cup before us. They should have deserved that. We won the World Cup. We won the European 2000. Platini won the European tournament as well in 1984. And then after us, the 2018 World Cup in Russia, they won it. And this generation, I think they've got enough quality to reach the World Cup next season and to do something even better than us. But something will never change in people's mind in France. We were the first one. We'll still forever the first one. And on top of it, we won the World Cup at home, which is... The impact was amazing. As a player, you know, it's beyond football. That's why I always say to the players, to any athletes, forget your sports. If you have the chance, the privilege to play for your country, you are an ambassador. It's beyond sport. If you have the chance to win something important, that will follow you until the end. And people will stop you in the street for what you've done as a sportsman or sportswoman, but they will stop you for the emotion you and the pride you will bring to people, you know. And people stop me every single day in Paris because of that.
Even today?
Even today.
Yeah.
Even in Montreal, people, they stop me. They thank me for what I've done in 1998. I'm quite surprised. I know that Quebec, you know, is quite French as well, but yeah. Football is it's amazing because everywhere I go to Bangkok, I go to China, I go to South Africa, everywhere, people, they stop me because of what I've done in football. We are not scientists. We are not politics. We don't change people's lives. We are here just to bring hope and emotions.
Yeah.
But the way we put football sometimes, it scares me, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are seen as gods. Right
yeah.
or wrong.
That's yeah, but we're not gods. We're just like a romance, you know, back in days.
Yeah.
You know,
I know
gladiators.
I think, though, when you guys won the World Cup, your team was phenomenal, but it united the country as well.
Yes, time, oh, yeah, you know? Definitely, yeah.
And I think that's what, the fans look at watching you when, you know, they were younger. And it's funny because, you know, they're stopping you is because they probably think you're friends, right? Because they watch you so much on TV and what you've done for a country.
It's very popular, you know, football.
Pedestal.
And you're right. And when we won the World Cup, there were, I think, a million of people on the Champs-Élysées, mm-hmm. millions of people in the street in France. And everybody was celebrating, you know, the victory. Didn't matter what kind of religion you were supporting, or politically as well, or the skin of your color, the color of your skin, didn't matter at all. And this is what I love the most with football. It unites people.
Yeah.
You said that you're not gods. Well, Zidane might be a god.
He's a god.
Yeah, he's a god, yeah.
I was with him last week.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you he's a god. He's a god. This is why I think politics, they don't like us really that much, you know, because we have something that they cannot get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we touch people's hearts, you know. And as you said, they have the feeling that we are sitting with them on the sofa drinking a beer, you know.
Yeah.
We are very close to them. Our generation are very close to people in France. And this is something I regret with the new generation. They are so far away sometimes with their other fans.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I mean, a prime example would be Mbappe, you know, was a wonderful footballer, wonderful player. But there is that distance, it seems, between him and the fans. It's maybe not his fault. I don't know if we get over that. We've almost elevated footballers to a level that is untenable.
But I can understand with the love and the pressure from people, you know. You mentioned Zinedine Zidane, last week when we were together at Aix-en-Provence, you know, at the Z5. We stayed for at least almost 4 days all together for the 27th anniversary of the World Cup. And he was sometimes with bodyguards because, as you said, he's a god. And people are very close to us, always, you know, asking for pictures, signatures, things like this. But when you talk about Zizou, you talk about the like of Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, those guys, you know, they are...
Different level.
Yeah.
You know, you look at your career and you played for some massive clubs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Barcelona, Monaco, and the French national team. Is there a player that you played with where you just went, wow, this guy is unbelievable? I mean, because you've played so many.
You have no idea.
But is there one or two where you go, these guys are just different levels?
So many, but I would probably put Zizou first.
Yeah.
I remember a game during the European tournament in 2000. We played against Czechoslovakia. And I was playing in midfield with him, and I gave him the ball, I passed him the ball, and I don't know why, in 1 or 2 seconds, I stopped playing. Just watch it. Honestly, I watch it.
I
you know,
imagine.
The way he moves, you know, His body, you know, it was kind of magical, you know, move all the time. You are always at the feeling that he's going to fall, but now the ball is there, but now it's not there. The ball is at the opposite way. And he did some tricks, you know, with his legs. Yeah. And the two guys there, they sat on their
backside.
Yeah. And it took probably 2 or 3 seconds, you know. It's very quick, you know. And I stopped playing. And and I realized that I was stopping my run, and I thought to myself, "Hey, wake up, Manu! You're not in the ground. You're on the pitch, so you have to wake up, play." So sometimes at the training session, he used to do things that you can't learn in a book. It's in his blood.
I think
even Dennis Bergkamp's.
Oh, yeah.
So what would your best five be? Your five aside team? Who would it be?
Oh, that's a good one.
Well,
yeah, and you're in it. You have to be in.
No. I won't put myself in the team.
Okay.
No.
You're pretty good though.
Yeah, no, I won't put myself. I would probably play up front. I have a stronger problem to decide between two guys, Thierry Henry and as well George Weah.
Oh. Mm, yeah.
George
Good
Weah.
Luck. Well,
in midfield, obviously, I will put probably Zizou. I will maybe play with Rivaldo.
Whoa.
And I will play with three strong guys, you know, that can recover the ball, fight, you know, not concede goals. I will probably play with Marcel Desailly, Lilian Thuram, and
it's a decent team.
And
right?
Patrick Vieira, yeah.
Oh, Vieira.
How Vieira? I mean, either you love him or you hate him, right? I love watching him play. He was played with such edge. He stood up to Roy Keane, and you know we saw it. So
we call him
times.
The big sausage.
Did you like? You're a big guy, but did you grow? Do you feel taller with him beside you?
We were playing like a piece of corn. With honesty, trust, and respect. And that's why I love playing with him, you know, on the pitch, because I knew that I could, he will support me at any case. And I think we were a piece of coin because of that, but because as well of our qualities, you know. He used to run with the ball in his feet. He used to break, you know, the lines in midfield. He used to play a small ball, you know, in his small areas. I used to play long ball. He was right-footed. I am left-footed. So this is something, he's white, I'm black. I mean, I like because we don't get the same style, but we complete each other very well.
Do you World Cup winners, do you still stay in touch? Are you still close now? How does it change your life, being a World Cup?
Change forever.
Yeah.
As I said, you can win 10 Champions League. It will be amazing stuff, you know. But that will talk to your own fans at the club. If you win something for your country, that's completely different. Even those people who are not interested about football, they know you. Mm-hmm. Because you make them proud. Do you have no idea how many people stop me in the street, girls and men, saying that... I don't know anything about football. I'm not interested about football, but I know who you are because of what you've done for the country. As I said, it's beyond football.
Yeah.
Is that why you keep the hair?
Well, this is my style, and I've got grey hair now, so I look older.
Hey, I thought maybe David Ginola, you know, set the table right with the grey hair in the Premier League of French players.
Yeah,
because of him.
You know, but I remember doing the commercial things, you know, with Paolo Maldini, the famous Italian left back, you know, for L'Oreal, and that was fun, you know. We did the commercial in Barcelona.
All the French guys have nice hair.
They do.
Giroud.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Zidane.
There's one thing you got. Better hair. Manu, listen, thank you so much for this.
Really
enjoyed it. Brain Eye is the app.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it on the podcast more. I'm going to sign up to it as well. I think it's really important
yeah.
for young athletes,
old athletes. Very easy to use, very cheap, and I can save people's lives from child to older people. And it's not only focused on sports who are dealing with concussion, but with every single human being, because when you get older, you develop, you know, problems in your brain. And we are working very hard, you know, with Joe, who is listening us, to develop the apps to go even further, you know, mm-hmm. with Parkinson, dementia, Alzheimer, things like this. But for security reason as well, I think the perspective, you know, of the app is tremendous, amazing. And but no, as I said, 40 seconds to use, very easy, you know, and in the palm of your hand. And honestly, the grassroots, parents, hockey players, everybody can use it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thoroughly enjoyed this. And enjoy the rest of your stay in Toronto.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Fantastic. That was awesome.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
See you maybe next season for the World Cup.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
I think you will get some games here, no?
Yeah, we have 7 or 8 games.
It is? Ah, yes, 7?
Yeah.
Here in Toronto?
Yeah. In Toronto, yeah, and then Vancouver.
Yeah, the okay.
So we have, I think Canada's first game is here. Yeah. And then not sure if it's going to be. But, and then Vancouver has 2 games.
Okay.
You get worked up, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I watched Canada the last time they qualified for the big tournament. I think they did well. They're improving a lot.
They have a lot of players in the
Yeah.